Notre Dame football weekend starts now on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. This is the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley. Now your hosts, Sean Stiers and former Irish quarterback Evan Sharpley.
And today, as much as any day, is probably when I should mention once again that he didn't just play football at Notre Dame. He played baseball as well, and some professional baseball in the Mariners organization. And we'll talk a little playoff baseball at the end of the show.
Great time of the year.
It's that time of year. October is my favorite month. I have an October birthday, and then just the fact that I'm such a baseball fan and a football fan, it's like October is the month.
And we've got a great lineup of teams. I mean, really good matchups. You know, I thought moving from the wild card now, you've got some great teams, some great players, some young talent. You've got some veterans that have been in the big leagues for a while. I love looking at this matchup. You have the Yankees and the Red Sox. You've got Houston in there. You've got the Nationals. Of course, the Cubs are very popular in this area.
Yep.
There's some great teams playing. Some great players too.
Did you grow up a Tigers fan? Being from Michigan?
Well, actually, so my dad grew up a Tigers fan, but when I was growing up. But, well, he grew up a Lions fan, too. So, growing up, neither the Tigers or the Lions were any good.
Yeah.
So, I didn't really have a pro football team. You know, Barry Sanders was kind of our saving grace for a while.
Right.
Because he was fun to watch. But on the baseball field, we had Derek Jeter from Kalamazoo area.
That's
so
true.
It was about 40 minutes from us. So, I really followed the Yankees until he stopped playing, a few years ago. So I don't know. I guess now maybe I'm a Marlins fan. I don't know with him taking over. So yeah, he was my guy. I mean, I played shortstop growing up until college. So I really tried to pattern myself after him. You know, he was a taller shortstop, 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", you know, that range. And I was 6'2". So really enjoyed watching his career throughout. So he was kind of our guy, being from that area. And like I said, the Tigers weren't great at that time, so we didn't really have, we still went to Tigers games. I didn't go to any Lions games, actually. I don't know if too many people did at that time.
Probably not.
But yeah, I mean.
Except for Thanksgiving,
and
right?
And we had, my dad and I had this great rivalry. Then I think it was more to spite him. He liked the Pistons, and the Pistons were they had some good teams growing up.
Absolutely.
I liked the Bulls. So we had this household rivalry. And of course, everyone usually liked the Bulls at that time. You have Jordan and Pippen. And
yep.
We had some fun rivalries in our house for sure.
Now, of course, you got Golden Tate, an old teammate of yours, playing for the Lions, and then a baseball teammate. AJ Pollock playing for the Diamondbacks, so got them all over the country.
Yeah, Notre Dame baseball's put some guys in the pros. I mean, if you look over the last 10 years, some guys I played with have made some runs. There's a couple of guys that have been called up in the last few years. Certainly, Jeff Samardzija has been, he's been a staple in big league baseball for a while. Moving,
you were
around.
Kind of there at the end of the Samardzija, right?
So I was with him for 2 years.
Was it two?
Yeah, 2 years for baseball, football. He was one of those interesting guys in college as a baseball player. He was our Friday night starter. He just was so naturally gifted. I mean, it was like, all right, we're going to give you the ball. You're going to go 9 innings. And he would get better as the game went on. He'd maybe give up a few hits in the early innings, three, four innings. And you're like, maybe that's all he's got. And then it'd be like 7, 8, 9 innings, velocity's going up. He's learned to develop a few off speed pitches as a big league pitcher, but I mean, he pitched off his fastball in college and, was pretty successful doing that.
Yep, wasn't too bad. He was still really raw back then.
Yes,
the big thing.
For him, he knew how to flip the switch on and off. Pretty relaxed guy off the field, kind of went to the beat of his own drum, I guess you could say. But when
that's kind of how I always said
that's how it was. But when the lights were the brightest, and on the football field too, I mean, he made plays, and it was like that on Friday nights, pitching too. Is the moment was really never too big, not many players know how to flip that switch. He knew how to flip that switch, and sometimes take it to a level even higher.
Absolutely. It is 12:04. I'm Sean Stiers, and he is Evan Sharpley. And the Leprechaun Lunch is presented by Sharpley Training. You can be a champion with Sharpley Training. Call today for a complimentary class, 574-226-8234. Visit sharpleytraining.com. We will talk a little bit more playoff baseball later on in the show. We have a lot to get to today. And, of course, the topic of the week has been what's going to happen at quarterback for Notre Dame. Brandon Wimbush.
I'm trying to play.
Oh, yeah. Got a little eligibility left, right?
Yeah. I petitioned the NCAA, but we know how long that takes to get a response back. So I don't think it's probably not going to happen by Saturday.
No kidding. So Brandon Wilbush has a foot strain, grade one, happened sometime last Saturday. He was on in a walking boot and on crutches during the week. Practiced the last couple of days. And after practice last night, Brian Kelly kind of gave a quick update on Brandon Wilbush.
Well, he's going to be able to, if he doesn't start, he's going to be able to do something. Absolutely.
So he's going to be able to do something. And he did say that he obviously didn't get into that extent. He said if Ian Book ends up being number one tomorrow, that Wilbush will be number two, which I found very interesting. But he did say had a solid week, I guess. He was able to run one day, threw a little bit. We saw a picture of him on Snapchat last night, getting ready to throw the ball in the red jersey and all that kind of stuff. But Kelly said they've got two more days, so he's going to get some rehab. And they hope that he's going to be where they want him to be. They expect more progress and that kind of thing. So
lots of fuzzy information.
Yes, staying as fuzzy.
He's gonna do something.
Really, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you kind of stay as fuzzy as possible?
I would think so. I mean, if you're uncertain, there's no reason to make a decision right now. I mean, you're going to have an opposing team now having to prepare for two quarterbacks. Each one, you know, is a little bit different to prepare for. You know, what I found interesting, and Kelly mentioned this on Tuesday in his press conference, was how he splits reps for his quarterbacks. He said it's not like the NFL, which in an NFL, you know, setting, the starting quarterback is getting all the reps. So if you're a backup quarterback, you are watching, you're getting mental reps. How Kelly said he splits it up is 60-40. So that's a pretty good split. You know, when Charlie Weiss was here, when I was the backup quarterback, I was lucky to get one or two reps in a team setting. So if I was going to
play, day?
On a day. So my work was in group, potentially in some 7-on-7 settings. If we were just running routes or throwing routes to the receivers or the running backs, that's where you get a lot of the work. When you're in the team setting and you're running team play, so this is going to be the entire offense, 11-on-11 versus the scout team, one or two plays at the end of that team setting. And we might do two or three team settings. So, you know, in an entire practice, it could be maybe 4 to 6 reps out of 50 or 60 plays that you may be running. It could be more than that. You know, in this type of practice setting now, the rep count is much higher. So, you know, the balance of film study and then the physical side is a little bit different. Like for me, I had to spend all of my time watching film, and then I had to really pay attention to all the
you're looking in the mirror and
you know, and if you had any expectations of playing, and I always looked at, you know, my job as the backup quarterback is a pretty important job because you're always one play away. No one knows who you are until you're on the field, and you want to make sure that when you are on the field, you know, they're remembering you for something different than not being prepared. But when you have a very small body of work and practice, you know, the physical side, you're going to have to stay extra. And so fortunately for Ian Book right now, he's gotten quite a bit of work. And I'm sure that then his workload, it might have been 60-40 the reverse now. It could have been higher than that, depending on how active Brandon Wilbush was throughout this week. He's going to, you know, Ian Book's going to have quite a bit of experience with the ones, the first team throughout this week of practice. So I think just having that, I'm sure that Ian Book's level of confidence and comfort level within the offense now, being in the program for a couple of years, but then also having a number of, I mean, we're in week 6 now, you know, that many reps built in at a 40% rate for 5 weeks up until this week is going to, you know, is going to, I think, put his mind at ease if he is going to register his first start this Saturday.
Absolutely. And whether or not that happens, we will all find out tomorrow. But here is Brian Kelly when he was asked about getting Book ready to go this week.
Know me pretty good. We're a 6-4 rep split operation. So he's been getting a lot of work through camp, through the season. So he's got a lot of meaningful reps. This is not a NFL operation where the starting quarterback gets all the work. It's a 60-40 split of reps. So he's gotten quite a bit of work, you know, leading up to this point. So we'll see where Brandon is, whether that changes or not. We'll get a look at it today. But if we've got to increase his reps, that would be the first thing that we would do.
And that was at the Tuesday press conference when Kelly said that. So now, as you said, 60-40 is a big difference from when you were going through it under Charlie Weiss. And really, I think part of that was because of Charlie's NFL background,
it
right?
Because you don't give absolutely. But you know what happens if you do that, and that was at every position. It wasn't necessarily just at the quarterback position. You're opening yourself up to a pretty huge hole. If
you open yourself up to 2007, I mean,
yes.
Right?
Okay, yes. Yeah, to I was going to say it. But yeah, go ahead and say it. You do.
And I mean, I'm not saying
you
know
what
I'm
just
saying.
At the quarterback position either, though, is we had a lot of veteran guys. We had a lot of upperclassmen playing on the offensive line. We had a lot of guys playing wide receiver. And now you're thrust into a position where you have inexperience across the board, offense and defense. And it was evident. You know, we had guys that hadn't played, that hadn't developed, and it wasn't just that hadn't played on Saturdays. It was guys that hadn't gotten meaningful reps in practice.
Right.
And, you know, if you learn anything in following college football, it's all about player development. These guys graduate in 4 years. It's not like you sign a contract and you can be on the same team for 10 years or you float around the NFL that you know, you're in this setting, you're in this system. That's not how it is. It's, you know, 3 years, 4 years sometimes. You've got to be able to develop players. And when one guy leaves or somebody gets hurt, you have to have someone that is going to be able to go in there and be serviceable or better. And I think if you look at the top tier programs, and everyone points to Alabama, certainly. I mean, if you look what their track record has been, they do a great job. Every year somebody gets drafted or leaves or graduates. Next year it's like
another guy in.
Same skill set, and certainly getting some talent helps too. But if you can develop those players and year in and year out, it's going to put your program in a very strong position.
Absolutely. With Evan Sharpley, I'm Sean Stiers. It is coming up on 12 minutes after 12 o'clock. The question I have, though, is regardless of if you're getting 40% of the reps on a regular basis, how big a difference now is it? Because now we're in the middle of the season. Things change once you're in a week-to-week situation. So how big a difference is it getting a guy ready to start in less than a week, essentially, compared to Wimbush or Kaiser, whoever it happens to be, having a whole off season where you're kind of in that spot and you're getting ready in that way.
Everything changes once you're QB1. Everything changes from how you're treated walking around campus to when you're in the building. You know, it's different. I mean, whether or not a lot of it's going to have to do with how Ian prepared in the off season. And I mean, I've been following this guy since high school. You know, he completed 70% of his passes as a senior. Super competitive guy, played lacrosse. I think he's got more athleticism than a lot of people give him credit for.
Hold on, he played lacrosse?
He played lacrosse.
Is he the next Kevin Hogan?
Who knows? But I mean, if you look at his high school stats, and granted, this is high school. It was the last time he played quite a bit. He's been doing the same thing. When we saw glimpses in practice, we've seen it. He's done the spring game. A 70% clip in high school. That's pretty dang good.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, his touchdown interception ratio, he threw 30 touchdowns as a senior, 5 picks. If you go back his junior and sophomore season, which he started both those years too, again, over 60%. And I've met with and talked with Ian's personal quarterback trainer, who's out from the West Coast, Will Hewlett, who's trained a number of top quarterbacks throughout the nation. A lot of guys, some Big Ten guys, Penn State, he has quite a few quarterbacks that have gone there. And one thing Will said was, you know, he has that ability, that accuracy. Some guys have it, some guys don't. Some guys have to work really hard at it. Some guys, it just kind of comes easy to. He said Ian's always has it. He's always had it, and he said that he thinks it's going to be, or it should translate, or will translate at the collegiate level too, where he's a 60 or 70% completion percentage guy. That's just his makeup. And if you look at his mechanics, you know, he's smooth, he's fluid, he's pure. You know, he gets, in, at least in the small glimpses we've seen, again, he was getting the ball out on time. I think if you look a year ago, you wouldn't say that. You know, he's still kind of swimming, you know, in the program, learning the offense. Confidence level is much higher now. I think, you know, expectations for him, if he does play this week, I don't know if you'd say they're going to be high. I think he's going to go in and run this offense and have some success.
See, and that's, you talked about confidence. I mean, part of that comes from the fact that now you don't have DeShone Kaiser and Malik Zaire here. He was the scout team guy last year. He's got more reps, and the more reps you get, the more confident you're going to get. So he has that going for him. And he obviously got more reps this week. And let's hear real quick from Brian Kelly talking about how he's looked at practice this week.
Well, I would say the same things, Pete. You know, he's very accurate with the football. He's got a good grasp of the offense. and he elevates the play of the guys around him. They all know that he is a really good quarterback, and I think in the times that he's played, real football in the spring game, he was really effective moving his squad, and every time he's gotten a chance to scrimmage with his unit, he's been effective moving the ball. So it's what we thought. He's had a good week and been really effective.
So that's Brian Kelly after practice last night. How do you think, though, having Ian Book at quarterback is going to change the offense versus when Brandon Wimbush is the quarterback?
I think you look at it, you have a guy who's 6 feet tall. that would be the knock against him. And that's if anybody follows recruiting, that's you say, oh, well, why is Notre Dame going after, a 6 foot, 200-pound quarterback? He's got good athleticism, and he's really accurate. How it changes, he's not as dynamic of a runner as Brandon Wimbush is. He's not. He's going to be able to run the offense, and you don't necessarily need to be super dynamic. If you make the right calls, you get your team into the right protections. If it's a zone read or it's an RPO and you're making the correct read based on alignment, based on blitz, if you do those things, I play with guys all the time, and I see it with my high school guys too, is you don't have to be the fastest or the quickest. If you're smart with what you're doing, you can still, pull on a zone read and pick up 10 yards. That's a first down.
Sure.
It doesn't necessarily need to be a 70-yard touchdown every time. And I think that's, you're going to get a guy in Ian Book who now has been in the program, who knows the offensive system, is going to make the right reads, the right calls, get the team into the right play. I think efficiency is a word that I would look for from him. He doesn't necessarily need to win the game. He just needs to be the reason that Notre Dame doesn't, or to be the reason that they wouldn't lose.
We know Notre Dame can run the ball. We know North Carolina is not good against the run. They're giving up 220 yards a game. Notre Dame's running for over 300 yards per game. So the natural assumption is North Carolina is going to stack the box and make Ian Book have to throw the ball. How confident are you, even with all the percentages that you rattled off, how confident are you that he can win that game?
I think Notre Dame's still going to try to run the football, even in a loaded box, to start the game.
They did it last week.
I mean, why wouldn't they? Mm-hmm. You look at their track record against teams that have either struggled against the run or on paper, Notre Dame should dominate the line of scrimmage. I mean, you look at Temple, you look at Boston College, really, throughout the second half last week. You look at these games, I don't see any reason why they can't establish the run, and what that's going to help Ian Book or even Brandon Wimbush at this point too is from a passing standpoint is take some of the pressure off of their shoulders and allow them to relax a little bit and get into the flow of the game. But certainly, regardless of whether it's Ian Book or Brandon Wimbush, if I'm North Carolina, yes, I'm loading. If I'm any team right now, I'm loading the box and saying, okay, we have two young quarterbacks. We have one that's been pretty inconsistent so far this year passing the ball. You have to beat us. We're not going to let Josh Adams run for 200 yards on four carries.
But doesn't Wimbush's ability that we've already seen, it's on tape and all the opponents have been able to see it. Some have got burned by it. Some of them haven't. His ability to be a game breaker as a runner, doesn't that change the way you have to defend him? And if he's not in there, doesn't that change the way North Carolina has to defend Notre Dame, even in the run game, if you are loading up or whatever you want to do?
Well, I want to give a little bit of credit to Ian Book. Like I said, I think
we don't know though. That's kind of an unknown.
But watching film on him and being around the type of player he is, I think that he gets undersold for his athleticism. I think he has more athleticism than people think. And yes, I think the broad picture, if you're looking at, you're saying you have Brandon Wimbush, who probably can put his foot in the ground and score from 80 yards out. I don't know if Ian is that type of player. But I think that he can pick up some big chunk plays.
So you think he can still, while he might not be getting 60 and 70, you think he can get 10 to 15 when he needs to?
I'll put it this way. I don't think that Chip Long and Brian Kelly are going to want to feature Ian Book running the ball 20 times like Brandon Wimbush has in many of the games this year.
Especially now that you're in a more tenuous situation.
Yeah, I think you're going to see, I don't think you're going to see as many design runs. Maybe in third and long, a quarterback draw, along those lines. I think that you're going to see a very similar offense. But you have a guy that if he is on and he is completing 60 to 70% of his passes, I think you're going to see a lot of move the pocket rollouts. I think you're going to see some play action built off of the success that Josh Adams has had running the football, and an offensive line that I think is going to be able to dominate and protect a guy.
You sound all in on Ian Book, and I suppose there's no reason not to be. I mean, you've seen him, you've played quarterback, so you've really evaluated him, everything. What is your chief concern with him if he's starting tomorrow?
The whole world's watching. That's something that Ron Paulus said to our quarterback group every week. I mean, you don't know what you're going to get until the bullets start flying. I can tell you, you know, in talking with, again, with Will Hewlett, Ian is a competitor. And that's, you know, that's one thing Mike Sanford said when he recruited him, when he was the quarterback coach. This kid is a competitor. So I'm excited either way, you know, to see what he brings to the table. But for me, of course, we're going to talk about it, and everyone's going to talk about the quarterback position. I don't really think this game is about the quarterback position. They got to run the football. They got to continue with that identity. If they can do that, you might be able to run out there and play some quarterback.
Hey, all right.
All right. I don't think anybody wants to see that, though. And defensively right now, too, you have a group with a lot of confidence, and you have a struggling North Carolina offense. There's going to be opportunities had for this Irish offense, even if there are some growing pains or struggles, if Ian Book ends up starting this week.
I'm not trying
to overhype him.
No. I know.
But I'm not as concerned. I like both guys. I like that they both bring something a little bit different. I guess I'm not that concerned about it.
A lot of people have obviously been calling for Book since day one, or at least since Georgia, anyway, when Wimbush didn't do well. But I've said all along, tamp the brakes on that. You know, one about Georgia, when you look at what Georgia
really
did to
good.
Mississippi State and Tennessee the last 2 weeks, what was it, 70-something to 3, the combined score of those two games? That's a really good Georgia defense. That his struggles in that game and everyone's struggles were still more about how good and how fast that Georgia defense is.
They're a really good football team.
Yes.
And I think, you know, if Notre Dame was competitive, it was a 1-point game. It wasn't like they got blown out like Tennessee did.
Right.
They were competitive. Their front seven is really fast. Their front seven is really good. And I think they're going to give a lot of teams trouble.
Yeah. I mean, there's every reason to believe that they're going to be playing Alabama in the SEC championship game.
And it'll probably be a good game.
They're gearing up toward the... And I mean, if Notre Dame does what it's supposed to do, that's going to do nothing but help Notre Dame down the... Just like the Clemson loss a couple years ago.
Yeah. Awesome loss.
Yeah, that's going to pull Notre Dame. The more Notre Dame takes care of its own business, it's going to pull Notre Dame along as well.
Well, they've got some marquee matchups coming up here in the second half of the season. I mean, if you know, USC, I think, is for me, is looking a little more manageable. The game that I'm circling is NC State. They look good, too. They have a really good defensive front as well.
Here's my biggest, not concern, but you've got these two quarterbacks. And again, everyone's been calling for Ian Book. He had a nice spring game and the whole thing, even though he was playing against the number two defense. And I don't mean this to be a knock, but it's a question that I have, especially for someone like you who sees it with a different eye. What does it say that you lose a quarterback to the NFL, a potential first-round guy, you lose another quarterback, he goes to an SEC school? What does it say that with two guys with really, you know, Wimbush had just a handful of experience compared to Book, what does it say that there was no quarterback competition, it was Wimbush's job from day one, in the spring and even through this fall? Shouldn't that give me some doubt?
Are you calling for a competition?
No, I mean, shouldn't that give me some concern about what we're going to see from this guy if he's playing tomorrow?
Well, I think that it was, you know, it was Brandon's time, and he did a nice job over the summer of putting in the work. You know, we don't really know behind the scenes what that competition was like. You know, what that type of relationship was. You know, how Tommy Reese and the quarterback room handled it. The conversations maybe with Brian Kelly and Chip Long, what that looked like. I can tell you this, as the backup quarterback, I'm sure that Ian didn't approach it as, well, you're the starting quarterback, so I've got the summer off.
Right.
You know, you're still pushing for that number one spot to be QB1. I understand where your thought process is, where, you know, it never was, okay, he's played well enough to push for a starting position.
I mean, to my own eye, when I saw him in the spring, there was an obvious gap in talent. I think Book in the few times that we got to see things in the fall, he had made up some of that gap. He was better. He was all the just again more reps and the whole thing because he was a scout team guy last year. He was fourth on the depth chart last year, but now, just like with Wimbush, I guess my biggest concern is you said all the eyes are on you, but now it's real. Now it's live. Now you have a real blitz. You have a real coverage that you have to read and the whole thing. That's my biggest concern.
We'll see what you're made of on Saturday.
that's exactly it.
You know, we can sit here and talk, you know, we can talk about it, and I can say that I'm not concerned, you know, that I like the level of play from both guys, but it's different when you have a 250-pound lineman coming and trying to get you, or they rotate late right before the snap and you miss your read. I mean, it's different. It just is. And you can't simulate that until you're actually on the field. Like, you know, for a young quarterback and a guy who could be making his first start, one of the things I liked was I wanted to get hit early. I'm awake now. Let's go play. You know, it's a long game.
Whoa.
Right? Yeah. Somebody's call design run. Let me get smacked a little bit.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to protect myself. But, you know, let me get hit. I'm awake now. Let me get an easy completion. How can you get into the flow of the game as quick as possible? Because, you know, if you make a mistake early, you don't want it to snowball. You don't want that confidence to be lost right away. It's got to be, all right, how can we get you in the flow? And, you know, in college teams and pro teams, they script plays. So you better believe that the coaching staff is sitting down with Ian Book and saying, hey, where are you most comfortable? Where is your happy zone within our offense? What list of plays would you like to see?
Okay, and they've kind of talked those. About that with Wimbush, too.
You got to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to play to the strengths, but also the confidence level of the quarterback that you have, because you don't want a less than confident quarterback going out there and calling a play that he doesn't want to call.
Two questions along those lines, then. One, we're five games in. Notre Dame has opened every game offensively with a pass play, including last week with obviously Wimbush throwing the ball. Do you have would they be confident enough in Ian Book to throw right away? Come out, throw, go deep, EQ.
Somebody.
Whoever it happens to be.
Yeah.
Throw right away, get him in the group. How many passes would you feel comfortable if it's Book all the way? How many would you be comfortable with him throwing tomorrow?
I like 20 to 25. With good balance, and I said this with a couple of young quarterbacks that Notre Dame has played against. If you're getting into, you know, the 25-30 range, and you're hoping that the quarterback then is going to win the game, and that really hasn't been Notre Dame this year, you know, they want to run the football to win the game, and I think that's got to be the mentality first.
Right.
Mix in the play action pass and take some shots downfield when they have those opportunities.
Maybe a flea flicker again. Who knows, huh? All right, they're playing a 1-4 team. Again, not good against the run. You've said establish the run. I completely agree with that.
They are riddled right now with injuries.
Yeah, they are. They've lost 13 guys, key guys on both sides of the ball. Who do you think is going to start tomorrow with all that we've heard this week? Do you think it'll be Wimbush or will it be Book?
My gut right now, Ian Book. Did I say that with a question? I think I did.
Ian.
Yeah. I think, too, I mean, my glass half empty, half full approach on this. You have a glass half empty is you have Brandon Wimbush not play this week. He misses out on an opportunity to develop some more chemistry in the game with his receivers, leading into a bye week before you have a really tough stretch of games. The glass half full is he gets to rest for 2 weeks. Really.
Wimbush.
Yes.
Yeah.
Your starting quarterback gets to rest for 2 weeks leading up to a very tough, you know, second half of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And you have another quarterback register his first start and get some really good game experience against a team that you should dominate. And I'm sure that these conversations are happening within the coaching staff too. What you don't want to do is, depending on how bad this strain is, you don't want to rush him back and then it turns into a season-ending injury. Or something that's worse, and now you're left with really one option at quarterback. I'm sure that's a topic of conversation too, because mm-hmm. you know outside of Ian Book, you have Avery Davis, who's a freshman, and you have Montgomery Van Gorder. So, and again, I've already petitioned the NCAA, and we're not getting word before tomorrow. So that's where they are right now. The quarterback
if you're talking just arm strength, there is a noticeable between Book and Montgomery Van Gorder. I mean, there's a drop off there. All right. So you're saying Ian Book?
I'm gonna say Ian Book. Yeah.
I tend to agree. That would probably be the way I go. At the same time, it's interesting that Bush would still be the number two quarterback if Book starts tomorrow. So that opens up a whole different set of circumstances if something would happen to Ian early on.
Yeah, I mean, at any point. I mean, it could be too. And Kelly said he's going to do something. I don't know if that means, you know, Wimbush is going to be the water boy. I don't know what that something is. He may get a little bit of work depending on how the game goes. And that could lend itself to, and I know he wanted to do this last week too against Miami of Ohio in the second half, was an offense, you know, an offensive drive to develop a little confidence through the air. You know, in the game plan, if we're talking again where the strengths are, if you have a guy who has a little bit of a bummed foot but needs to work on the passing game, keep him in the pocket. All right, let's have you go out there and run, you know, go two drives.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised, but if Ian gets in there and gets hot, I don't know if you'd see, I think you'd rest him.
And if Ian Book gets in there and gets hot, then that's a whole nother conversation we're having next week.
Well, we got a bye week, so we got to have something to talk
about, true.
Right?
That's true. 12:31, we're going to take a timeout. Leprechaun Lunch, he's Evan Sharpley, I'm Sean Steyer's. Game day tomorrow, full day of Notre Dame football starts at 9 in the morning. The Jack Swarbrick Show, Brian Kelly Show at 10 o'clock, followed by Game Day with Evan Sharpley and Tim Grawl at 11. Then at noon, it's Budweiser's Game Day Sports Beat with Darren Pritchett, Eric Hansen, and me. The IMG pregame show at 2:30. Then it's Notre Dame, North Carolina at 3:30. When that's all over, the official Notre Dame football postgame show, Darren Pritchett along with Reggie Brooks. That is all tomorrow here on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. Chalk Talk with Evan. We're going to talk a little defense, some defensive coverage in Evan's Chalk Talk that is coming up next when the Leprechaun Lunch continues on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. Leprechaun Lunch. He's Evan Sharpley. I'm Sean Stairs. Be sure to join Evan and Tim Grawl tomorrow at 11 o'clock for game day. Guests include Notre Dame's fourth all-time leading rusher, for now anyway, Darius Walker, as well as former Fighting Irish lineman and ESPN host Mike Golic Jr., and then the continued tribute to Ara Parsegan with his memories, the 1969 unanimous All-American and Green Bay Packer defensive tackle Mike McCoy. That is all on tomorrow's show. Sounds like a lot of good stuff right there. You guys always have a lot of great guests on the show, though.
Yeah, we do. It's usually a lot of great stories. It'd be good to have Darius on. I played with him for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And, yeah, somebody is on the hunt for for the yardage right now.
Yeah, that's right. We'll talk about Josh Adams here in just a minute. Let's do Evan's Chalk Talk first. As good as things looked against Miami last week, overall, the end result and everything, a couple of blips as well. Nick Watkins, who hadn't given up much all season, ended up giving up a couple of touchdown passes.
Yeah, we really hadn't heard much from him, which was a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, that usually at the cornerback position, if you either aren't getting targeted or you're getting targeted and making plays, and when no one really hears your name, you're doing a pretty good job. But they targeted him quite a bit. And Gardner's a pretty good receiver. I mean, I think his length, even though Watkins is pretty tall for a cornerback, at the cornerback position, gave him some fits. And Gus Ragland threw some great passes too. Mm-hmm. They utilized the back shoulder a little bit, some fade balls. And sometimes it's just not your day at the cornerback position, and kind of, you know, one area where I think, at least from like a fan perspective, is, you know, why isn't the defensive back either turning or making a play on the ball, and that goes into how it's coached, and also coverage plays into that as well.
Exactly. And Gardner, for one thing Nick Watkins has been able to do for a good part of the season, it was use his physicality.
Right, physical, yeah.
Yeah,
reroute at the line of scrimmage.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
And but Gardner was a little bit, he's a physical guy himself, so I think that kind of countered that a little bit. So the question comes up at Brian Kelly's press conference this week, what they teach in terms of when it's time to look for the ball and all that kind of thing. So here is Brian Kelly's response to that. Quote, well, it depends if he's in press or if he's in off man. If he's in press and he doesn't get a good collision and he gets beat off the line of scrimmage, he can't turn back for the ball, so he's got to play through the receiver and break through the basket. If he's in an off man, We want to stay on top of the man at all times. We want to stay on top. That's why we're playing in off situations. So it really depends on if you're in off quarters, off man, or press, end quote. So that's Brian Kelly. So, Evan, a lot of technical stuff there. So this is Evan's chalk talk. This is a time when he's going to break down some of that technical stuff,
Kelly's talking about. If you're watching a game and you're looking at what type of coverages are being played, it always starts with what the safeties are doing. And Mike Elko brings in a defense that really likes to rotate the safeties. They might start in too high, and what that means is you're going to see two safeties. You're going to see a free safety and a strong safety, or how they're labeled now in the new system as a stud and a whip. And those guys really are interchangeable to a certain extent, and they're trying to help with the run. So you might see Nick Coleman rotate down into the box to try to help the run. You might see a Devin Studstill or Jalen Elliott do the same thing. It all starts with that rotation. And based on that rotation, you're going to see what type of coverage. We would call it either post-high safety, which would mean that there's a middle-of-the-field safety, or middle of the field open versus middle of the field closed. If the middle of the field is closed, there's a safety standing in the middle of the field. If the middle of the field is open, it means there's usually two safeties, and then there's open space within the middle of the field. Now, when we're talking about this type of man coverage that Brian Kelly is describing, either press man, which is going to be Nick Watkins at the line of scrimmage, playing physical, mm-hmm. trying to reroute, and use the word collision, you're trying to throw off the timing right at the line of scrimmage. And then it's going to be, maybe the terms you've heard is like a bump and run type of coverage. So you're going to collide, and then you're going to run, trying to run in the hip pocket of the receiver. Now with that, if you don't get a good collision, you could be trailing the receiver the entire route. Now, what does that open you up to? Obviously getting beat deep on just a streak, or the back shoulder throw. So it makes it very hard for you to play the receiver, turn around and make an athletic play on the football. Listen, I think it'd be difficult for most people to go out there and cover me, and I'm not a great receiver. And now you've got a guy who's 6'4 or 6'5 that probably runs a 4'5 or 4'6. It is hard to play defensive back. Outside of the quarterback position, playing cornerback, being on an island, it is very difficult to defend a pass. So you're worried about, you don't know what route they're running. It's not like the receiver walks up, shakes your hand, and says, "Hey, brother, I'm going to be running a 14-yard comeback here. So I'm going to get out of my break as the defensive back and be able to make a play. Or, hey, I'm running a go here. I'm going to turn my head and try to make a play." You don't know what that receiver's doing. You don't know when the ball's in the air. It's not like you're playing Madden football and you're watching, that I threw the football. You don't see that. It's loud. You don't know. The safety might try to say something, but you probably can't hear 9 times out of 10 when the ball is in the air. So what do you watch for when you're in that press man? You're watching the eyes of the receiver. And when you're hearing they work through the basket, that means as soon as the receiver, whether his eyes light up a little bit, whether his hands start to work towards the ball, you're going to try to work through the basket of that catch. So it'd be splitting the receiver's hands to try to knock the ball out. That's easier said than done, because you get some receivers, they don't give you any tells. They practice that. They don't give you any tells. So that part of it is very hard. When you're playing off man, a lot easier, because what you're doing is you're still playing man coverage, but you are saying you're not gonna get beat deep. And you're essentially, you could be watching the quarterback and you can be watching the route in front of you the entire time. So it's easier to make a play on the ball then, because your style of defense has changed a little bit. I would say it's a little more passive, but it gives you a better vantage point to make plays on the football versus a little more of aggressive style, which is going to be a bump man or a press man.
Well, and it looked like Gardner used some double moves a couple of times as well, and to counter some of the stuff that Watkins or whoever else
it's
wanted
mean.
To do.
Double moves are mean. And if you can protect at the line of scrimmage, that's and teams are gonna play man coverage and they're gonna rotate safeties, you're gonna end up being on an island as a cornerback. And if you have a guy who can run some routes, if he can get off the collision, they're going to be able to make some plays downfield. Now, the adjustment to that is going to be, we might not rotate a safety. We might give you some safety help over the top of the field. And one thing that Elko has really brought, and if you look at his teams at Bowling Green and Wake Forest, they try to use the sideline as their friend and force the ball there. But guess what? Those back shoulder throws are hard to defend. And if you have a quarterback and receiver that are on the same page, you're gonna pick up some big plays, and obviously what we saw last week against Miami, how is some touchdowns too.
Well, and again, not to excuse it or whatever, but this was a guy who had almost 300 yards, Gardner, going into the game, which is more than anyone on Notre Dame's roster had, and a good quarterback as well. We knew this would be a pretty good quarterback. They found a way to make a couple plays. Is it a big concern? That's something that we'll find out going forward when we see if some of these other teams try to attack that now and exploit that.
Right. So if you look at, you know, a worst case scenario and a best case, at least in examples of how to play this, you have Nick Watkins, who, you know, got eaten up for most of the game. And it might have been, you know, in certain situations he was playing that press man and didn't work through the basket, or he was playing off man and didn't get a good read, whatever it was. But you also had Julian Love, who made a really nice play knocking a football down, where he was able to ride the hip pocket of the receiver. And at the last minute, he saw the receiver's eyes light up and was able to turn and make a play on the ball. So you see the technique there. And it's just going to be about being consistent within that technique.
Yeah, that's exactly kind of what I was going to say. It's not like that Watkins was beaten so badly that he wasn't even there. It's just a matter of some finer points,
yeah,
it
absolutely.
Seems like.
Yeah.
All right, it is coming up on 12:45, Leprechaun Lunch. He's Evan Sharpley. I'm Sean Sayers. Real quick, Josh Adams. We talked about Darius Walker maybe being run down here pretty soon. Josh Adams, fourth in the nation right now, 658 yards, averaging better than 9 yards per carry, which is third nationally. What do you think of what you've seen from him so far? Man, it's hard not to be. I don't know how you're not. And when you look at, I can't remember which run it was, but there's one. So a linebacker comes and kind of sits in the middle. Watkins runs right past him to the right, and then a couple of guys kind of try to get him. And I mean, there were some holes there, but he almost completely stops, cuts, and then reaccelerates again, and almost outruns everybody to the end zone.
A couple of stiff arms too.
Yeah, the stiff arm.
I mean, that's, you know, he brings a great balance of speed and power, and I think we've seen a little bit more of the power. You know, with his length, it doesn't always look like he's running super fast. He just covers a lot of ground with his strides.
That's the thing to me that, like, when you look at him and you see him out of uniform, he's almost built more like a wide receiver than a running back.
Yeah, really, really long. Really long limbs, arms, legs, I guess less of a prototypical, you know, maybe bowling ball type of running back.
Mm-hmm.
But he's, you know, I mean, he's really excelled. I mean, last game, you know, I think if you looked at that first quarter, you probably, you know, if you started looking, okay, we're going to do the math here. He's on pace for 600 yards rushing, mean, you know, on 20 carries. So it was, you know, it was unfortunate to see that he got banged up early in the game and couldn't really finish that out. But yeah, what a performance early on to really set the tone for the rest of the game. And it'll be nice to have him back healthy. Dexter Williams is supposed to play as well. So between those two guys, I mean, a lot of explosiveness. I mean, 9 yards a carry, that's pretty good. He only has 4 touchdowns, though.
And that's the thing.
But Wimbush has 8, so.
Exactly.
It balances
and
out.
And that's kind of part of it is Wimbush has sort of finished off right. some of those big runs where Josh Adams couldn't quite get to the end zone. But between the fact that some of these games have been lopsided and you're getting other guys in there, and then you look at the fact that they didn't have to keep him in there last week, when you look at Bryce Love from Stanford, he's got a little over 1,000 yards right now.
Yeah, 300 last
leading
week.
The nation. Yeah. And I mean,
and then Barkley from Penn State is getting a lot of love too.
Yeah, Josh Adams probably could have had 300 right. by halftime if he stayed in there the way last week was going. So, he's right in that conversation.
I think so, and I guess, you know, what it would be was, you know, within the national conversation is he's got USC coming up, he's got NC State coming up.
Yeah,
if you can do it against those two teams, there's going to be, you know, there's going to be a lot more. I think the hype train will really start to roll then.
Absolutely. A lot of people, real quick, complaining that the tight ends, I keep hearing this, that the tight ends aren't involved enough in the offense. Last year, tight ends combined for 12 catches, 159 yards. Alize Mack right now, 11 catches by himself.
Second on the team.
For 116 yards. Yeah. So, I mean, I realize they weren't as involved last week, but overall, I mean,
expectations.
They're a part of the offense.
Sean, expectations is what, you know, we've been talking about Alize Mack for 3 years. You know, kind of a legend of some sorts coming out of Bishop Gorman. He was going to come in the tight end position, hadn't really produced very much. The expectations were really high to say, all right, we have a guy now that can, it's a hybrid that can play, you know, he can block in line. He can be attached to the formation. We can detach him. He can play receiver. You know, the days of Tyler Eifert, you know, going down the middle of the field and making touchdown catches. And unfortunately, I don't think it's been to that extent, but you still have a guy who, if you look at the production over the last 2 or 3 years of the tight end position, they are producing. What I would be more concerned about, and what I would be complaining about less about the tight end position, is why do the receivers, why are they not putting up bigger numbers?
Exactly.
And I get it. It's a catch 22. You have a quarterback that's been struggling to throw the football. That's a portion of it. You know, Equanimeous St. Brown right now is 202 receiving yards and a couple of touchdowns. I think, you know, the expectations for him, I mean, to have another 1,000-yard receiving year, and that's, you know, that's still possible. But instead of looking at the, I mean, Durham Smyse made some big catches. Nick Wisher made a big catch early in the year.
And the thing is, if EQ gets going, then that just opens everything up for everybody else.
And then if you can establish a little bit more of a vertical threat too,
exactly,
or middle of the field, balance is the key. And right now it's short to medium passes. There really isn't a deep threat right now, and I think that's where the tight end position, I guess, can get overlooked. Is if you aren't establishing that deep threat, the tight ends are going to be a small portion. Granted, it's a little bit bigger than the last few years.
Mm-hmm. Better take a break. 12:50, we'll talk a little baseball next. The playoffs are here. As I said, Evan also played for the Notre Dame baseball team. And I got a blast from the past I'm going to throw at you here in a second. when we come back, we'll do that right after this. Leprechaun Lunch presented by Sharply Training. Give them a call, 574-226-8234, or visit sharplytraining.com. It is 12:54 on this Friday morning with Evan Sharply. I'm Sean Steyer's Leprechaun Lunch on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM. WSBT, we talked earlier in the show. I mean, it is baseball season right now. The playoffs are starting. Cubs play tonight, game one, 7:31. Kyle Hendricks against Steven Strasburg as the Cubs and Nationals get their playoff series started. And Evan, talking earlier, for the people that don't realize that you did play for the Notre Dame baseball team as well. I know, obviously, baseball doesn't get as much publicity as football, but do you have any one moment, any most memorable moment from your time playing baseball with Notre Dame that stands out for you?
Yeah, you know, we were down in Florida for a spring break trip. I wasn't playing at the time. I came off the bench and hit an oppo bomb that kind of catapulted my junior year into being one of my more successful years. That was probably one of my favorite moments. My one recollection prior to that was we were playing at the Twin Stadium, and I faced Joba Chamberlain. We had a guy who was mid at bat, got hurt, and I had to go out and finish his at bat. That was my first collegiate experience. So that was like my welcome to college baseball. But probably my favorite moment was the opposite field home run.
Do you remember who that was against? Where that was?
I don't remember. I know.
A lot of Florida trips. That was bleeding together.
It ended up being a rally starter where we ended up, it was close. I think it was extras at the time. And it either tied or put us ahead, and we ended up winning the game. So that was a pretty cool moment for me.
Okay. Would that be 2008? Does that sound right?
That would have been...
Junior year?
It would have been 2000... Well, yeah, it would have been spring 2008.
Okay.
Spring 2008.
All right. So I was still around, and I'm trying to... That's not ringing a bell, but I missed a lot of those trips when I was doing women's basketball as well, too.
We might have been in Texas. It was somewhere warm.
Yeah. The one... What if I say Weber International?
Oh, my God. The double pop-up hurt the double to second base, right? Man, if I would have hit it as far as I hit it high, that ball might still be going.
I know.
I put some special English on that. That thing must have twirled around. Yeah.
That's right. And I was looking up because that's always the first thing when I think about it. Now, I remember calling a lot of your home runs as well, but that's always the first thing that I think about when I think about you. That was a little bit, that was inland in Florida, Babson Park, Florida. Where the place, you guys were in Tampa, and I think a game ended up getting rained out, so we get on the bus and we drive to the middle of Florida and we pull into this little town, and it was a beautiful setting. There was a lake beyond the outfield wall, and the sun was setting and there were all these clouds rolling in. So you guys are trailing going into the ninth by 4 runs.
Right.
And then cut the lead to 2. The bases are loaded, 2 outs. And you come up, and the wind's blowing all over the place. And you, and like you said, you pop this ball up to second base. And the thing that obviously, you know, we can sit here and laugh about it, but you didn't just jog to first or whatever. You ran all the way to second. The tying runs end up scoring. You guys end up winning in 10 innings. Crazy. Just a crazy one. All right. We've got to get out of here. We'll make our prediction coming up next on WSBT. All right. We've got to get out of here real quick. Evan, your prediction for tomorrow's game, Notre Dame, North Carolina.
You want the quick version?
Yes.
38-16 Irish.
38?
Yeah. But they might score 40. Who knows? That's what they do right now.
The over-under for this game is 62.5 points.
Did you do the math? Am I under? I think I'm under.
38, so you're way under. They've gone in
62.
The only game they have not covered or hit the over-under this year is the Georgia game. They have gone over the over-under and
covered the spread. Maybe I should go with the over then, huh?
I think so, too. I'm picking Notre Dame. I will give my score on Game Day Sports Beat tomorrow with Darren Pritchett and Eric Hansen. So that's what we've got to look forward to. All right, sounds good. And again, Evan Sharpley and Tim Growl, Darius Walker. Who are the other guests off the top of your head?
Mike McCoy and Mike Golic Jr.
That's right.
He's always fun to listen to.
So we've got that coming up tomorrow. All right. We went over a little bit today. Rich Eisen Show is on the way. Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT, South Bend.